Hello and welcome to the LRM podcast, sponsored by Adrian Flux Insurance. I'm Martin Dominey.
And I'm Steve Miller.
And you join us for a chat about Land Rovers with a very special guest this week. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Nick Dimbleby is here.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be finally on the sofa.
I know, it's taken a bit of teeing up, hasn't it? But you're finally here and we're geared up for a good old chat about your latest adventure, primarily, which is in the latest issue of Land Rover Monthly, in shops now, for 1 week.
For 1 week only.
You've got a week to get it since this podcast goes live. And I thoroughly recommend you do, because it's packed with great stories, including Nick's Freelander adventure to the Himalayas. So obviously the story that you've done for the magazine is fantastic, but we thought we'd get you in and get a little bit more detail. So tell us how it came about.
Okay, start at the beginning. Well, I guess the first part was getting hold of a Freelander. That was the first part. And of course, at that point, I had no intention of going to India with it or doing anything. It was just one of those things that I quite liked the idea of getting a Freelander. So as you do, you sort of scroll through eBay and
we've all been there.
Yeah, exactly. So you're sort of basically looking through these different sort of things. So I've actually been doing this a fair amount of time, and in fact this year is actually my 30th year of being a professional photographer and working for Land Rover. So one of my first jobs was Camel Trophy in 1996, but the actual first job I did for Land Rover was the Freelander launch, Freelander 1 launch.
Wow.
So I have a bit of an affinity with Freelanders.
Rightly so.
And then yellow Freelanders, because I also did the US launch of the Freelander, which was in 2003. And that was when they launched the three-door Freelander over in the US. And the hero colour was a bright yellow soft top. So I always had a thing like, yeah, bright yellow soft top is where it's at. So when a bright yellow soft top appeared on eBay whilst I was working away in the US, I thought, well, let's give it a bid. So anyway, it was a car that hadn't been on the road for 2 years, had no MOT, so obviously a very sensible purchase.
It's definitely one to have.
But you know, reading through it, the description and looking at the photos, it looked, you know, like quite a nice, honest car. So. So because the auction was finishing at about 4 a.m. because of the time difference, I was like, well, when I went to bed, I was like, oh, you know what, I'll just put a bid of 750, you know, one of these sort of stealth bids that, you know, if it's bound to go for more, so I won't get it. But, you know, it's one of those things. And anyway, so the alarm went off in the morning, and I sort of, you know, reached for my phone, and as I'm sort of looking at the screen, it's congratulations, you've won the auction. And I'm like, okay. I better ring my wife and tell her that I've bought a car unintentionally. But it was good. It was good. So, that was it. So that was how it all started in terms of actually purchasing the car that we took to India, which, again, was not the original plan. But, so then I went and picked this car up, which was down in Devon. And I've got a trailer, so that was great to be able to go and pick that up. And obviously was fairly sure that it wasn't going to be MOT'd and straight away being able to be driven home. So I took it to Sue and Norbert, who run a company called Freelanderspecialist.com.
In Thetford?
In Methwold, actually. In Norfolk. And they, as they says on the tin, that they specialise in Freelander 1s and 2s. So they were like, yep, bring it over, we'll have a look at it. And so I did. I dropped it off there, and they went through it really, really carefully. And, after a bit of time and a bit of money spent, it was a good car.
That's the thing about Freelanders. I know Land Rovers in general, we all sing their praises about how easy they are to work on. But a Freelander is actually, when you get underneath one, as long as it's not something that's going to cost a lot of money, like a viscous coupling, and even them now, they've come down. They're actually pretty basic, aren't they?
A viscous coupling was one of the things I had to replace.
Oh, was it?
But, you know, it was, I did go with my eyes open. You know, it was, the car itself, I paid all of £720 for. So, I figured that for that sort of money, I mean, you think about it, that's a car, you know, that's a whole car.
Yeah, that's a monthly payment on a new one.
Exactly, exactly.
Probably half of it.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, absolutely.
On a new one.
Absolutely.
Yeah, what a machine. So It's Borrego yellow.
Borrego yellow, exactly, yeah. That.
Three-door. Yeah. Again, three-door. You'll see this if you rush out and purchase your copy of the magazine if you haven't already. A lot of people get confused, don't they, and say they're the G4 edition, but they actually were never called that. They were the Kalahari.
Correct. There we go. Let's get us all put our anoraks. Yeah.
Sorry. That's great. I anoraked up a bit quickly there, didn't I? That's it. I just couldn't wait to get that little fact out.
Yeah, exactly that. So the Borrego yellow three-door is the Kalahari, which was... back end of 2002. That was it was a run-out model for the original shape before the facelift.
That's right.
Which is in 2003.
Cool. Good stuff. I remember going to my local dealer, which I later ended up working in, and getting the brochure for the G4 edition Discovery.
Yes.
Discovery 2 right, at the time.
Because they were Borrego yellow and Tangiers orange.
Mm,
and black.
And silver,
that's right. Yes. Yes. Right.
Really fetching strong money they are now.
A nice one is, the I can't remember what the material's called, the bumpy
that's right.
seat. Mogul,
that's
right. Was it Mogul?
I think it was
something like that.
Mogul fabric, yeah, exactly.
And the big roof, what a car. Anyway, sorry.
So just coming back to this, so that's interesting you say about the interior, because, of course, I like to tinker with cars, and obviously, all of us Land Rover people like to tinker with our Land Rovers.
You almost have to be able to tease.
Yeah, so the Kalahari actually came with these leather seats.
Oh, right.
Which they look wrong. They're massive, big, puffy, big leather seats.
Full leather?
Full leather in the Kalahari.
Really?
Yeah, exactly. So, and you'll see, if you see any interior shots of my car, you'll see that it does have the Mogul fabric seats, which were, and again, I'll get my anorak on here, for the US spec cars, they were fitted with those type of seats.
Wow.
Which is, and I wanted to get that. So, again, good old eBay that you... Those type of seats were put in the UK in the post-facelift Freelander.
Right.
So I bought a set of seats from I think it was an 04 and 05 car that had been scrapped. And those seats were then retrofitted to my car. But there's a twist.
Yeah.
Because those seats were in very good condition. The seat bases were pretty poor. So my friend William Hedrick from the US... I'm sure you Defender of Defenders.
Mm. Yes.
So he bought a Range Rover Classic in the US that had been retrofitted with seats out of a Freelander.
That is a conversion I've never heard of.
And then he basically took those seats out to put it back to standard. So he had a set of these two seats. So at enormous expense, I also shipped those seats over from the US.
Yeah.
£720 Freelander is no longer a £720.
Well, yes, I'm afraid I'm a bit of a...
I admire the commitment.
Yeah, exactly. But that's where it's at. It's proper, because not many people that... You're not in a sort of you're not competing with other people for this stuff at the minute, are you?
Not really, no.
You will be, though.
Yes, well, of course, things like seats are tricky, because the nice thing about buying a left-hand drive seat, you see, and this is where you're coming from here. Yes. So the right-hand side is the driver's side in the UK, which obviously gets worn out, whereas, of course, in the US, the left-hand side is the passenger side. Sorry, the right-hand side is the passenger side, which means that you have a nice, fresh seat base that you can put on as your driver's seat. So there you go.
He's thought of everything.
Yeah. Top tip given away right there.
Exactly, yeah. But if you want to replace the seat bases, go to a left-hand drive market.
So is your Freelander... The K-Series petrol?
It is. Yeah, really? Yeah, the 1.8.
You'd know this if you'd read the feature. Come on, Steve.
I did read the feature.
Oh, right, okay.
But did I miss that bit then?
I must have mentioned it somewhere.
Yeah, you did.
Yes. But, yeah. Well, that was, and again, that was another thing that was a worry, because obviously the K-Series has a bit of reputation for getting a little bit hot, shall we say. But again, the nice thing about this, when the description of the with the car when I bought it, it had been replaced, the head gasket had gone. In fact, the previous owner to me, I think he paid... nothing or 50 quid for the car because it had a blown engine.
Wow.
Oh, okay.
So he replaced it with the it's an N series upgrade where you get longer bolts and it
there's a whole upgrade package which comes with an oil rail, different head bolts, different gasket, remote thermostat, the whole kit basically.
Exactly. So that had been done on my car. So that was a real sort of confidence thing that I was sure that the engine wasn't going to be a problem, and the engine is absolutely sweet as you like. It really is a pleasure.
So the Freelander, it was at Freelander Specialist being worked on.
Yeah.
So the plan then, how did the Indian Himalayan,
yes.
or would you say Himalayan, because you've been.
Well, that's the, all the Indians that were that organised the event. They do say the Himalayas. It's the Himalayas. Yeah, it's the Himalayan adventure,
which is apparently the correct way.
It is the correct way of saying it. Yeah. All the locals, all the Indians that organised the trip. Yeah, so that. But I'm going to stick with Himalayans because it's a natural thing.
It's just for me. It's Himalayan.
Yeah, Himalayans.
But we will be corrected.
The correct emphasis.
Yeah. I never knew that. Fair enough.
True. Yeah, yeah. But anyway, so. Yes, so how do we end up going to India? That is a good question. So back to the Freelander specialist. So if you read the feature, you'll see that there are three Freelanders in that particular feature, all brightly coloured. My yellow three-door, but also a camel trophy, which is actually owned by Sue and Norbert, who have the business. And then the third car, which is a G4 Challenge V6,
Right, okay.
Yeah, so that's that one is owned by Trevor and Ruth, and so that's where the story starts, because Trevor bought that car specifically to do this trip. So he'd done a previous rally with the same organisers and was looking for a car to do this Himalayan Himalayan event, and so he obviously figured that Freelander would be perfect. So he bought that car, and then he'd taken it to Sue and Norbert to get checked over and get sort of made ready for that adventure. Told them about the adventure, and they were like, well, we've got this Camel Trophy Freelander that would be ideal for that as well. So they then also signed up, and then they happened to mention it to me in passing, and I thought, well, that sounds like quite a good trip. And I spoke to my wife, and she said, that sounds like a good trip. So that was it. We were done. That was
fate.
It. It was fate. Yeah. Fate. So it was all from that one purchase of the Freelander. We ended up going as a trio to India.
Brilliant. And I must say,
if you're thinking of going off-roading, did you know that most standard insurance policies won't cover you if your Landy gets damaged? That's where our sponsor Adrian Flux comes in. They can include off-roading and green laning cover on your Land Rover insurance policy, perfect for those who like to push their 4x4 to the limit. Just search Adrian Flux Land Rover Insurance for more information or call them directly on 0344 728 0417 for a quote.
I know, you know, given your profession, you do fantastic photography, but they look so stunning against the backdrop in the Himalayas.
It looks so right, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it really does.
I mean, it's one of those things, like three bright coloured vehicles in the snow. You can't fail to go wrong, really, can you?
The stuff dreams are made of.
I can imagine, like, the locals when you were there would have just been like gathering round, and you would have been
we had quite an interesting. So it wasn't just Freelanders, obviously, in the rally. You can see on in the magazine there was a real mix of vehicles. In fact, the entries were any vehicle built between 1952 and 2002. So any vehicles built between that time. So could be 4x4, could be cars. So, you know, in the article there, you can see there's a Subaru Impreza WRX. There's an old Nissan. So that was one of the ones that actually competed in the rallies back in the 80s.
Oh, cool.
A Toyota Land Cruiser. There was a Mini from the UK. We also had some various different Mercedes. So again, so we had a 2002 Mercedes plus a couple of classic ones, one from the 80s and the one from the 60s. So it was a real mix of vehicles. But actually, to be honest, and I'm obviously biased, but the Freelander was the perfect car for it. Really was. Bit of ground clearance, enough power to get through, and just comfortable, and yeah, really, really perfect car for the job.
Looking at some of the roads and the smaller mountain roads that you took on during this, I can see how the Freelander would lend itself especially well, being, you know, independent suspension, totally. Reasonably smooth, a good bit of ground clearance. I wonder how the lower vehicles got on. Were there any casualties along the way? Well,
the funny thing was, it was almost like the hare and the tortoise, because obviously you look at that Subaru Impreza, which obviously, you know, great car, four-wheel drive, but obviously the ground clearance, not so good. We were a few times when we were on these sort of rough mountain passes where we were just sort of, you know, ticking along, and then there'd be a nice little tarmac section, and he'd hair past us at high speed. And then, you know, a bit later on, he'd be going a lot slower because he'd be afraid of getting a puncture or you know, grounding out. And then we'd just be like, you know, oh, hello there, you know, and we'd just drive straight past again. So, yeah, it was a nice consistent speed from the Freelanders.
So I read in the article, like, it took 6 weeks to get the car there.
Yes.
And then obviously 6 weeks.
Well, longer, actually. It literally arrived last week.
Oh, okay.
So I went to the port and picked it up. Yeah. So, and it took so long, the MOT and tax ran out. So,
okay. So essentially for 3 months then, your car is gone.
Yeah.
And basically, you have it for a week.
Well, longer than that, actually, because I think the car left at the end of August, and then we got it back at the beginning of February. So,
wow.
Because you had a bit of a tight deadline.
September, October, November, December, January. So it's almost, well, 6 months, isn't it, basically?
Yeah, a long time.
So, yeah, 6 months for 10 days.
It's almost like three stories, isn't it?
Well, it was.
Well, that's a good point, Steve.
You sussed me out.
So you're shipping it back out there.
Exactly,
right?
That's it. I think I was trying to work out if I'd guess
had it for a year. Yeah.
That's right, save a fortune on storage. What,
in terms of, like, cost to ship a car to India, I mean, is that an easy process? Is it...
Yeah, so the nice thing about the organisers, so the company that organises it is called Firefox, and they're an Indian company, basically a bunch of enthusiasts, and I think all of them are involved with the Himalaya rally from the 80s, so a couple of them are navigators as a driver, okay. And they're just basically reliving their youth. So it's an Indian company that puts it all together, and they had a sponsorship deal with a shipping company, so... The actual cost of the trip and the shipping was $3,500 for the two of us.
That's so really good.
It was a really good price, and that was one of the things that was like, right, that's the clincher. So
that is amazing, actually.
It's an amazing, yeah. It was a really, really good price. I think they may have underestimated how much she cost. I think any subsequent event may be a little bit more expensive, but I think the way it works, they just sort of do. You know, they run it as enthusiasts. They make a bit of money, but I don't think they're it's not their full time job. You know, Rajan, who's the main guy behind it, he's retired, and I think he just does it for a bit of fun. And
project.
Yeah, as long as it sort of washes its face, he's happy. So
brilliant,
it's great.
Yeah, I was thinking it'd be well over $10,000 or something like that.
No, it's much cheaper. Yeah, that's it. I wouldn't have been able to afford it if it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's just
because it's you know it's if it's some of these. Other rallies that you hear about, you know, it is 10, 15, 20 grand, you know, and that's a lot of money, isn't it?
It is a big chump.
Whereas that's, you know, it's affordable.
Steve's got a little bit of a vested interest in the Himalayas at the moment, haven't you, Steve? Because Steve's been, he's got his heart set on a motorbike trip there, haven't you?
Yeah, okay. Definitely. So I've been watching Itchy Boots, Norrally.
Right.
Who's done a lot of Himalayan trips on bikes, few people on YouTube, and I mean they have like the finest tarmac until there's no more tarmac,
exactly,
and then it's the roughest.
It is
probably
it's
a bit like the Fen roads where you live, Martin. You
probably
know?
Yeah.
The roads are like,
except there's no nice tarmac in the Fens.
Yes, yeah, but they're really immaculate. I mean, what a place and a culture, and I'm.
It is a. It is go. A. An. I mean, the whole experience was fantastic in terms of it is. It's almost like it's another, well, it is another world, you know. But again, the contrast is you go from these amazing motorways that are, you know, probably only 2 or 3 years old, you know, and very little traffic. And then you get up into the mountains and the hills and it is, you know, roads that are just barely clinging onto the side of the mountain.
Landslides every...
Yeah, but also it's... I mean, I'm guessing it's a bit like how it would have been driving in the UK sort of 50, 60 years ago, where the roads go through the towns. And of course, you know, there was lots of bypasses built in the 70s and the 80s. And you don't even think about it. Whereas, you know, all the roads go straight down the middle of the towns. The problem is they've got modern amounts of traffic.
Right.
So you've got trucks, buses, cars, motorbikes, mopeds, people on foot, people herding cows, you know, sheep. Going through these little tiny towns and it's chaos.
Because there are rules there, but no one follows them.
Yeah, basically it's actually a lot of fun.
I can imagine it almost looks like. I mean, I've watched you know these my motorcycle vloggers and things, and it's almost like becomes like a computer game.
It is.
They're just going through a process.
Super Mario Kart on steroids.
I'll go from here to here. How do I get from A to B? and they're just weaving in and out.
And there's no aggression. That's the other thing. People are sounding their horns, but it's not aggressive. It's just like, I'm here.
Yeah.
You know, I want to get through. And of course, the rules of the road are the biggest thing takes precedence. So if you're in a, you know, an enormous truck, then obviously you're the king of the road. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
It's only the other way around here, isn't it? Pretty much, you know, cyclists.
Yeah, to a degree.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yes. Cyclists have priority.
Yeah. Pedestrians have priority to cross the road.
That's true. Yeah, good point. Yeah.
If you're a pedestrian, you do not want to be stepping out in front of a truck.
But if you got knocked down there, say if you're on a motorcycle and you got knocked down by a lorry, you were in the wrong. You should have got out of the way.
Yeah.
It's true. That's true. And that's exactly how it works.
It's a system that looks very broken, but it looks like it works.
It does. It looks fun.
There was
one town that it took us probably about 45 minutes to get through, and it was chaos. It was absolute chaos. There was trucks coming left, right and centre, buses, you know, everything's on the horn, everything's sort of, you know, lots of smog and, you know, really, I mean, from a pedestrian point of view, really unpleasant, but it was... We just somehow managed to get through. You were squeezing through these tiny gaps and, you know, people waving at you and sounding their horns. But it wasn't. It was just great. It was a real experience. But, you know, having said that, I wouldn't want to do it every day. If that was your commute, you'd be like, I think I might walk tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'll work from home today.
Yeah. How did the mighty 1.8 put up with the mountain roads and the gradients? Because it's obviously not flat like the Fens.
It was all right, actually. It was it's all about gear choice.
Right.
Just revving the nuts off it all the time. It was good. It was good. It was, in fact, at one point, again, we were given the Impreza run for its money, you know. We were not doing too bad.
Shuffling along.
Yeah. We only did, I mean, again, you're reading the article, the only slight downside was as we climbed higher, the air pressure changed, which was a weakness in our expansion tank on the cooling system.
Ah, yes. Yeah.
And not just our car, but also on the Camel Trophy.
Right, okay.
So, so Sir Norbert had taken one expansion tank, expecting it to be either the V6 or the 1.8 that was going to have an issue with it. But actually, it was their car that went first. So, but purely from old age, basically, it was little hairline cracks on the top of the tank where the screw top is.
Yes.
And that basically was enough to release the pressure. I think the cap as well were a little bit tired. And then, of course, the car started to get a bit warm as they were going higher, obviously working quite hard with the uphill, constant uphill. So theirs started to overheat first. They replaced it with the expansion tank and they were fine. And then, literally a couple of hours later, ours was exactly the same. So little tiny hairline cracks. But obviously there was only one expansion tank. So our solution was to unplug the thermostat so that the twin fans are like constantly running. Okay. So so we sounded like a Hoover every time we turned up.
I was going to say a jet.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's probably more accurate. Yeah, they do move a lot of air, those fans.
They move a lot of air. Yeah, and very impressive. So this was probably third of the way in. So we did pretty much the whole trip, including all the mountain stuff with our fans on full blast all the time.
The dulcet tones and twin electric.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, it's like that little story I told you about Gus going through that little town. They must be all looking and going, why has he got his fans on full speed?
But, what sort of altitude did you get up to?
Top altitude, I think, off the top of my head, was about 14,000 feet.
Did you have any sick altitude sickness?
I've been all right. Yeah, I've done a few high altitude things, and I had a good bit of advice from one of the event medics, and that's like, just be an old man, just don't move too quickly.
Walk around like me. Then.
I said, so what's new? You want me to do differently?
Just do everything a bit
slowly. Exactly.
Right, okay. Oh. Yeah. So
that's the trick. Yeah. So when you're at altitude, don't try and rush around. Drink plenty of water. Don't go crazy. Really, that's the key. And we were fine. So.
Yeah, what a place. I mean, it just... the disappointing thing about the article is you could fill an entire magazine with photos, could you?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the... For me, just what a place to go to. I have to go. I do have to go.
You should.
Yeah, definitely. You should.
I'll just get on eBay now and buy myself a Freelander. I reckon that would be the perfect car.
I honestly, I know people rib Freelanders, and I know they're a butt of a lot of jokes, but they are brilliant cars.
They are.
They are brilliant cars. Yeah, I've had 2 Freelander ones, and of course my daily driver now, or it was a Freelander 2 until my wife confiscated it.
It's because they're so good. That's why she's confiscated it.
She's, yeah, well, she's got great taste in men and cars. But yeah, the Freelanders, just they're just absolutely brilliant.
You know your 4x4. You've chosen every upgrade, every bolt-on with purpose. So when it comes to tyres, chunkier, wider, more capable for the conditions, you want the perfect fit. Not just any tyre, your tyre. That's why you'll choose 4x4tyres.co.uk, the wheel and tyre specialists, trusted by Land Rover owners and serious off-roaders alike. Whether you're upsizing, overlanding, making your Defender look the part, or your Discovery turn heads, we'll guide you to the right set. With over 800 fitting locations across the UK, from online to on-road, we've got you covered. Browse by vehicle, wheel size or brand. 4x4tyres.co.uk. The right fit, the right place, the right price.
So I bought it, would have been September 2024. So obviously it's been away for 6 months. So I've only had it for 9 months.
Do you use it now?
So it's now gone back to Sue and Norbert to be just checked over and make sure everything's all good. Get the expansion tank replaced, obviously. So it'll be back home, I guess, at the end of the month. I shall get it out and start using it again, which will be great. But it's it's what really surprised me is as a 24-year-old car this year is how rust-free it is. It's really, really, really impressive. It was how clean and stuff it is. I think the only thing that's not so good with it is the paintwork. It's I don't know if you've seen other Barigo yellow, but it seems that those bright colours seem to suffer from lacquer peel.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know why it is. I think it's, I don't know whether it's a certain type of paint, but the brighter colours definitely have an issue. So
interesting.
So yeah, so there's a thought of maybe giving a little bit of a spruce up.
It sounds like it deserves it now. It's pretty good metal.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was bought literally as a bit of a, almost like a bit of a throwaway idea, and now it's sort of, it's kind of got under my skin a little bit. So and again, I'm looking forward to taking the roof off as well. Obviously in the summer. That's the other thing about the 3-door, of course, is you can take that back of the hard top comes off.
Mm.
It's got the 2 sunroof panels as well. They also come out.
The unclippable Targa panels.
Exactly. So you can actually run with the thing effectively as like a sort of a Targa convertible.
Such a bargain way into Land Rover ownership. If you're even on the fence about it and you've not owned one, just say they're out there.
They are.
And you can still look after it like a classic. It's like
absolutely
a classic.
Yeah. So really again, beautiful. There's loads of bits out there and they're easy to work on. They're if you buy the 1.8, you've got loads of space in the engine bay.
It's like a bit of a dot on the landscape, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
You could do what you did, turbocharge it.
Yes, indeed. Can all bolt on parts from an MGZT or a Rover 75.
Yes. Yeah.
That really does transform them. But even as a standard car, like you say, because they are more car-based than your B-Max or Land Rovers, everything's a little bit smaller and lighter. So if you're not used to working on big, heavy stuff, they're a delight, really, and everything's very accessible.
And capable off-road as well. So I've not taken that off-road in terms of, obviously with the gravel tracks and stuff. But I remember working as a photographer with a project with Land Rover back in, it was probably the late 90s, and it was when Freelander had just come out, and it was a Range Rover event, and they had lots of journalists driving Range Rovers at Solihull, and I was given a Freelander basically to follow them to go and get ahead and try and get some pictures. At the time I was like, oh God, I can't believe you've given me a Freelander, because obviously they're going down some pretty serious rutted tracks. But I tell you what, I was really impressed. That car did amazingly well because it's got a really good little four-wheel drive system. As long as you're okay with a little bit of noise underneath as you're scraping along.
Well, that's the other thing. Well. The undertray gives it a really nice flat surface at the front. Yeah. So even if you do skid over things, it's not the end of the world, is it? It's what it's there for.
Yeah, that's what they're
doing. There are companies that do bits now, aren't there?
For, yeah.
For the ones and twos. And
absolutely. They're,
if you wanted to pep them up a bit.
It went a long time where really the only aftermarket upgrade as far as off-road stuff went was if you were lucky enough to find some bits off a Jeep, like a real G4 event vehicle.
Exactly, yeah.
Mantec would have made the bits for them, I believe.
That's right. Yeah.
But now, like, Muddy Mods do complete underbody protection. They do lift kits, they do spacers and light mounts and everything you'd want to customise a Freelander. So, yeah, I think even, like we said, as standard, they're a capable thing. But a few little modifications. For awesome. Green laning and daily nipping about, it's going to be hard to beat, really, for sort of cost-effective way of running a Land Rover.
And yeah, cheap to run.
Mm.
Good fuel consumption.
What do you reckon you got, roughly? What would you say?
I don't know, I shouldn't really add it up.
Probably for the best, actually.
Yeah, I'd say it's going to be late 20s, early 30s, probably, I'd have thought.
Respectable, isn't it?
Yeah.
For the sort of
environment that it's working in.
The gradients, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It just looks so at home, doesn't it? Look at it there.
Yeah, it's great. It's lovely. I mean, they're a good-looking car as well. That's the other thing. You know, I mean, you know, what I do for a living is try and make cars look good. And then when you've got a good, you know, I mean, that's the nice thing about working for... For Land Rover, you generally have quite good, you know, source material to work with. But that particular in the three door in the yellow, I think, is a really great looking car.
Definitely.
Those wheels as well. The wheels are nice. Well,
I forget what these are called, but I went and found a set of these for my blue one that I turbocharged because I love the design that much.
Yeah, they do look good.
They're probably the best design, I would say, for the Mark One Freelander.
Yeah. It does look so cool there.
They look like a big mini light, don't they?
Exactly that, yeah.
The pre-facelift looks properly classic now.
It does.
Yes. In fact, I was going to say, they seem to be becoming quite hot property for, do you know Festival of the Unexceptional?
Yes,
People are really into early Freelanders and they get all like the 90s, like the side body moulding and the light pods and stuff like that.
Three-spoke wheels. That's it. Had the three-spoke, well, didn't they?
Do you remember the first ones, you could get a green interior?
Yes. Yeah.
I say green, I mean, it's more like a turquoise.
Yeah.
The steering wheel was turquoise, I think, wasn't it? And everything.
There was, really.
Was it not two-tone?
It was two-tone.
Two-tone.
But
colour,
I'm pretty sure the steering wheel was turquoise.
I remember it.
That's a bold statement, isn't it?
We used to
look after one at Marshall's, and it was, the body was like a, I don't think I've ever seen another, like a purpley blue. And that had the turquoise, well, it was two-tone, turquoise and sort of grey interior,
right.
Leather interior. Really, really of its time. But that was, we thought it was horrible at the time. But looking back, it's like, yeah, they're really smart. And, of course, they did the 50th anniversary in the pre-facelift as well. That's quite a rare thing if you can find one.
Makes me want to go on eBay right now.
I know. I bet there's some good ones right there.
Yeah.
That's it.
Well, I bet there are.
You'll see the spike in eBay searches for Freelanders after this podcast.
I genuinely believe, especially the pre-facelift, they're going to get a real... They've already got a following, but that's going to really take...
And again, for me, the three-door is where it's at. Because, I feel very fortunate that the car that I purchased was a really good car. In fact, I think on a previous podcast you talked about it. It's one of the things I love when you buy a secondhand car is ones where you've got the full ownership documents, full service history, big pile of receipts. You know, if you've got a car that's got that, for me, that's like I'm sold.
It's Nirvana.
Because it's, you just know that the car's been loved, and I think the previous owners to the car. Yeah, they loved it, and it was, and it shows.
I suppose that's really, no one goes out and buys a yellow Freelander by mistake, do they?
No, that's true.
They're going to be either really keen on yellow cars or really keen on Freelanders or both. Yes, so they're going to be, I guess, mostly enthusiasts, which is absolutely brilliant when it comes to buying one further down the line.
Totally, yeah.
But yeah.
And it came with a soft back as well, you know, the little fold.
Really?
Yeah, so I've got the hard top. So it came with the hard top. But also the soft bat was in the boot. So,
massive bonus.
A massive bonus. And in fact, the guys at the Freelander Specialist said, well, you know, those buying one of those on eBay is about £650.
Yeah.
So effectively, I got the car for £100.
Yeah. And for not a lot of money, really, in the hobby scheme of things, you've had a trip of, you know, bucket list trip, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we did spend a bit of money on the car to get it to a good standard. Yeah. But then I'm quite picky.
Car.
You know, I could have probably taken a less... complete approach, but we changed the suspension, we changed the brakes, we did the VCU, all the seals were done. So yeah, I like my cars to be reliable.
Yeah,
work. Yeah, I think again, it's like thing. If you invest in the car, you look after it. It looks after you.
Absolutely. I've got a nerdy Freelander question. Mm-hmm. In the back,
yes.
Does it have the seats that meet in the middle, or does it have the plastic pod with the cup holders in?
So unfortunately, it has the seats that meet in the middle.
Oh.
I would have loved to have had the seats, the two individual seats.
Sad story. When I was working on LRO, we ended up buying and then breaking a Freelander 1. I can't remember. We used it for a feature, and it was rotten. So we took the good bits off the VCU and sold them and whatever else. And I kept these seats for so long, months and months and months. Yeah, yeah. And they were the separate ones with the center console.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were just so bulky and they took up so much room. I ended up, they went in the bin, unfortunately. Okay. I know. I really wish I'd kept them. But
all this stuff at the top.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. It's like all these cars that get scrapped and broken and squashed, you know, it's...
they're never coming back. That's the thing, isn't it?
That's what makes the ones that are left even more rare and more desirable. So, but yeah, those seats. So I would have loved to have fitted those, but because I had that particular type of material...
Yes.
They were never made in that material.
It was early cars only, wasn't it?
Early cars only. Yeah. And another, obviously, anorak fact, Camel Trophy Freelanders.
Yeah.
So they're five-door, obviously.
Yeah.
So they have the individual seats in the back, so they had the three-door.
Really?
Yeah, so that's because of the idea was they wanted more storage, and obviously there was never going to be more than four people on the event in the car, so that's why they fitted those three-door seats to all the Camel Trophy five doors.
You saw the price of the Camel Trophy.
Yes,
went for at the NEC in November.
Funnily enough, it was. Well, funny enough, it was actually while we were away.
Okay.
So that was... we were all watching it and we're like, oh, I wonder what this is going to go for.
Because I spoke to the chap.
Simon. Simon Pickin.
Yeah, from
Arbil.
Arbil, yeah. And he was like, you know, the guide price was like, no, I said, I think it'll go for a bit more than that. And in fact, there's a live video on our...
Everyone's jaws dropping to the floor.
Couldn't believe what... Oh, what was the final figure of that?
It was 55 grand, was it?
Yeah.
It was way... I mean, the guide price was 15,000 quid.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
I felt like offering him 15,000 there and then, but even that felt like strong money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. For sure.
And all of a sudden, it just went mad.
Still haven't found out who bought it, have we?
No.
I think it stayed in the country, though.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah, yeah. There was... Just couldn't get my head around the fact that just goes to show, though...
The appreciation.
10 years ago, there was not a million years would
yeah,
that
yeah.
happened.
Yeah, yeah. But again, you know, it's like there's things, isn't it? You kick yourself because... At the time, I've had numerous times you sort of could have bought a Camel Trophy Freelander, but didn't. Mm. And I'm like, I wish I'd had, but you know, there you go.
Hindsight
is
a wonderful thing.
There's another little twist in this tale. I don't know if we should have mentioned it earlier, but that G4 Freelander, so that was from the 2003 event. And I actually found out that car was the car that I had in Australia on that event. So I was a photographer on the 2003 G4 Challenge, and that was the car that was allocated to me in Australia. So I spent a good sort of week in that car, and I hadn't seen it, you know, since I left, you know, shut the door on it in 2003 and went off to our next part of the stage. And the next time I saw it was there in India.
That is so cool. What a coincidence. Yeah. Wow.
But I suppose at the time, the car was just a tool to get from A to B, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And now also exactly. The memory of it.
Absolutely.
It's different.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. So there we go. Sort of, 22 years on.
What a thing. Absolutely awesome. So have you got any, I know you say you're going to perhaps sort out the few paintwork blemishes and do a few other little bits. Have you? Do you think you'll bust the Freelander out for another adventure in the future?
Well, that's a good question, actually. Yeah, so there's another one. The people that organise this are doing a trip, another trip in India in December this year. I don't think we'll probably go and do that because we sort of missed out on our sort of family holiday to do that. We've got grown up kids now, so they sort of tend to do their own thing, but we might do something as a family this year, I think. But I think next year we'll do maybe another trip with that. But in terms of the Freelander, I don't think there'll be anything super exotic, but I'm definitely going to get the roof off and and cruise about a little bit in the summer. I think that's the plan. If we get a summer, of course. But
Let's keep the fingers crossed.
We've booked it, in fact, for the weekend of the 11th and 12th of July.
Is that right? Oh, there we go.
Summer is booked for that weekend.
So there we go. Then I shall
Landover Fest.
Yes. So that's it. I should take the roof off and bring it there then.
Oh, perfect. We'd love to see it.
Put it on our stand. There you go.
There we go. Perfect.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Big tick there then.
Lovely. Happy days.
Yeah.
What a thing. But if you haven't already, for crying out loud, run out. Don't walk. Run. And grab yourself the March issue
You've
of Land Rover Monthly.
Left.
You've got a week to get it in the shops, or of course you can head to landrovermonthly.co.uk and grab it off our website, because you can still buy back issues.
That's
there.
It. If you're listening to this in 6 months' time, then exactly, you can go to
hopefully
buy it online and relive the adventure.
Absolutely,
it's worth. But when there's magazines like this with features in it, it's worth just buying them and keeping them and referring back to them, because you never know when you might want to plan that trip yourself.
Finding the right parts for your Land Rover or Range Rover shouldn't be an off-road challenge. At bmh4x4.com, we've built a smarter way to get you back on track. Our new website is now live, the simple, fast and reliable way to find the parts and accessories you need. Supplying quality parts for Defender 1983 to 2016, Discovery 1, 2, 3 and 4, Range Rover Sport 2005 to 2013, with Range Rover P38A and L322 coming soon. All parts are backed by expert knowledge, quick delivery and a 2-year quality guarantee. Visit bmh4x4.com, built by enthusiasts for enthusiasts.
So I've been working for Land Rover magazines, well, since I was about 14 years old. So, and I think I've pretty much got every issue.
Really?
Of most of them, yeah.
Really? I was going to ask you about that, actually. So you would have started working for Richard Hal Thomas, the founder of LRM.
LRO.
In his LRO days.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, back in, so the first article that I had in Land Rover Owner, as it was then, was in March 1988.
Wow.
So there we go. So I was born in June 73, so I guess I was 14, wasn't I?
Okay.
Kicked your career off early.
Kicked my career off early, yeah.
Fair play.
So how did you get into the magazine at the time? Did you know Richard?
Or
did
you no, so I did.
Email, oh, you wouldn't have emailed him, would you? how modern.
That's right. Well, I think I did write in.
You
yeah,
wrote
exactly
in.
With a stamp, yeah. Exactly.
Send an email in, like,
exactly.
I can imagine.
Well, that's it. I mean, yeah. That's the crazy thing, isn't it? You know, that's... In our lifetimes, that's all.
A nice letter. Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, so I actually wrote a book on Range Rover conversions when I was 13.
Okay.
That's where it all started. And they reviewed the book. And I think I sort of got in touch and said, you know, there's plenty more of that where this came from if you're interested. And obviously being a bit of a nerdy teenage Land Rover anorak, I just sort of started doing that. And I was into photography, into cars, into Land Rovers. So, you know, was able to sort of carry that on by doing articles about, yeah, different things. So that first one was about Range Rover conversion, so effectively promoting the book. But then I then carried that on by doing stories about working Land Rovers, so photographing what were then, you know, they weren't Defenders then. They were even, it was pre-Defender.
Yeah, so
it was Defender was in 91, so... Yeah, so basically Land Rover was in use with National Grid, and I did a feature about the ones that were being used at Hinkley Point Nuclear Power Station, which was local to where I grew up. So, so there we go. That's where it all started.
Wow.
Maybe we should talk about this in another episode.
Well, yeah. It's funny you should say that, Nick.
Was that a teed up one a bit? Should we hold on to that for part two?
It's, there's way too much to fit into one episode, so and we really appreciate you making the trip, so it'd be rude not to to have a second one, which will be running the week after you hear this one, where we're going to cover a lot more diverse topics than just your awesome Freelander adventure. And I cannot emphasise enough how much, just how great it looks in print. Look at that, Steve.
I know. I'm going.
Just look at it.
I just don't know whether it'll be a four-wheel.
The official, what you were saying before, this is one of the things that, as a photographer, I'm so pleased that, magazines are still around, because, obviously it's one thing seeing stuff online, but actually having a copy of a magazine in your hand,
yeah,
with printed photographs and words that, you know, you don't have to zoom in to,
yeah,
to read.
Yeah.
It's great. And I think that's, you know, long live the printed word and printed photograph, because, yeah, there is something different about having a physical magazine to have. And I've kept all my old magazines, and I have, you know, way too much.
I was going to say, you'll have a lot of, I mean, what? How many magazines are we on to? 300 and...
Let me have a look at the spine of this one, yeah. Steve. This is number 344.
There you go. So I've got 344 under a monthlies in my office. Yeah.
It's a lot of weight.
It's a lot of weight. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's a lot of quality content, is what it is, Steve.
It is, and actually, it is actually. If you're at a loose end, I actually do go back and look at some of the, and it's fascinating to see some of the old stories, and you know, and again, when these cars were new,
yeah,
you know, that's it. You look back, and you know, there's stuff that we now call classic, They were brand new.
It's scary, isn't it?
And this is what we'll see in the future. You know, we were talking about Octas earlier on. You know, the first generation, yeah, of Octas, they're going to be, you know, give it another 20 years.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're going to be probably few and far between, but the ones that have, you know, survived in amazing condition will be collectible.
But we won't be able to get any dinosaur feel for it, they will.
There'll be solutions for that by then.
Yeah, they will.
Yeah, definitely. I have to say, like what you were saying about the magazines, whenever I'm on eBay, if I'm not looking for Land Rovers, I'll search for issues of, well, it was predominantly LRO back then, I'll search for the issues I bought when I was like 11, 12, 13, and I'll order them again, so because they obviously would have gone missing years ago, and I'll just, yeah, relive them. It's so good.
It's really interesting to do that, and you see front covers, so you go, oh, I can remember buying that magazine.
Yeah,
it,
yeah,
takes you back to a time that you were at a Land Rover show, and you know, everyone had the magazines then, and you know, it was the way everyone communicated or learned about stuff.
I think obviously we do still put an enormous amount of effort into LRM, but the fact that people who buy Land Rover magazines like Land Rovers, they love analog stuff. I think that's what they'd much rather have, a paper product sat on a, you know, workbench or a coffee table or whatever, than, like you said, have to zoom in on your phone and, you know, squint at the text when it's,
that's right,
the lighting's not right and things like that. There's a lot to be said for it, and we're so grateful, yeah, that it's still going strong.
And even on like something like an iPad or a computer, it's still, for me, a photograph looks so much better when it's printed.
The other thing with when you've got a double page spread and you've got the photo and the words online, you see the left hand page and the right hand page.
Yeah.
You can't see it in its
full. That's right.
And you can't get.
Yeah,
it's not quite the
like
same
that image there.
Look, that was
the
impactful, yeah,
that,
is it?
Yeah, that, yeah, that double page there, and you've got all three cars with others behind.
It's huge, beautiful, snowy mountains. Get rid of the text box and the headline. That's a poster, isn't it? You'd have that on your wall.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well,
that's a good idea.
There you go. So as I already said,
special edition signed copies.
Yeah. Oh, he's got it in
it's
the back.
Black marker out now. We're selling a few copies off. Yeah.
Yes, I think to be fair, we'll wind this one down. But as I've already said, probably for the fifth time this podcast, if you haven't already, the March 2026 issue of Land Rover Monthly, which in fact doesn't just come with Land Rover Monthly, you also get our restoration special Land Rover Life with it in the bag. Rush out, grab it. If you've missed it in the shops, if you're listening to this after the mags come off sale, then head to landrovermonthly.co.uk, hit the Land Rover Monthly tab, and you can buy a copy off our online shop, so you won't miss out. Yeah, I mean, what else is there to say? Oh, follow Steve on Instagram if you want.
Yeah, Steve Miller Automotive.
I'm Land Rover Martin. And Nick, you're also on Instagram.
I am, yeah. It's Nick Dimbleby.
Yeah.
Word.
You post some awesome stuff. Well worth a follow. And yes, yeah, fantastic.
I was thinking today, actually, it's actually almost 10 years since I've been on Instagram now.
Really?
Yeah.
So, wow.
And in fact, I think all the content right back from when I first started. So it's actually, I always think it's quite fun. You actually scroll back and look through all the old stuff, and there's, you know, things that were, well, like recently the Last Defender production.
Yes.
It was 10 years ago.
Yes.
Well, that's on my feed. So
wow.
So, but when it was actually posted at the time. So okay. It's quite interesting.
That's mad, isn't it? I don't think I certainly wasn't on Instagram 10 years ago, but to think it's been like it's been in existence that long, it's just gone in the blink of an eye, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Crikey. But yes, so join us next week when we will return with Nick Dimbleby for more Land Rover stories. And in the meantime, thanks again for listening. Don't forget, if you'd be so kind as to leave us a little review or a rating on your preferred streaming platform, or send a bit of feedback to editorial@lrm.co.uk, or if you've got any questions, send them also to editorial@lrm.co.uk. We need to have a proper podcast dedicated to answering listeners' questions soon, because they are building up. So apologies if we haven't got to yours yet. Don't worry, it is coming. Steve, anything to add?
Nothing at all.
Brilliant. Yeah. Should we go?
No, I haven't. Honestly, that will be next week.
Yes, that will be next week. Tune in next week when we're back with Nick for more Land Rover goodness. But in the meantime, thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye. Thank you.